We're supposed to solve all of the problems of ISKCON in a few days. So Mahaprabhu has sent you all to do this. So let us see what will happen. The first day we'll talk amongst ourselves as a total group. In the next couple of days, we'll do a little more interactive investigation in small groups. And especially since we're going to do that, and much of our discussion, I think, should be based on the aggregate of the people that we have here. We can take this course in many different directions. But I'd like us to introduce ourselves first, and we'll have a better idea of who we are, all are as a group, because we will approach these discussions based on a group, since we're going to be talking about community, looking at the past briefly, touching upon the present, but mostly looking toward the future. So if we can start on this side, you can just introduce, if you can mention who you are and what country you're from and what your service is, just very brief. You got to speak loud because we don't have microphones.
My name is Bhakti Adam.
Can you hear in the back? Smriti, can you hear? Speak louder.
My name is Ika Chakra. I'm from Paris.
Let's see what happens. If we turn the fans off, is it going to be too hot in here? We try it and see. Just turn them off. Turn the fans off and let's see what happens. But maybe leave the door open. Or are we going to worry about mosquitoes then, huh? Or make it lower. Yes? Someone turn this one down some also. Turn it down. Yes.
I'm from India.
With the BBT?
BBT.
Yes. Speak a little louder. They can't hear you in the back. Louder. A little louder. We want to know each other. We're going to be together for a couple of days, working hopefully in a synergistic way with our different ideas and different experiences. As we discuss things, it's going to be a lot based on also your own personal realizations and experiences along with Prabhupada's books. Yes. Berkeley.
Cool. My name is Madhu Madhava. I came from Japan. Myself, temple management and teaching.
Okay. Mother in the back. I think it's all of us. I'm sorry. Missing the whole group down here. Please. Bhakti Tirtha Swami, here to learn from all of you, to benefit from this amazing international array of devotees. Pachirati, if you can just count the number of devotees while I'm talking. How many? 46? Okay. Because tomorrow we're going to break in groups according to our size. 46. So our course is about strengthening the Vaishnava communities. So obviously we need to look closer at what is community. We need to look at why there's a need to strengthen, to reinforce. First, we can appreciate that there's a lot of fragmentation. We were trying to count last year, and we came up with approximately, and it's kind of hard to really hone into it, but we may have lost about 1,000 devotees just last year alone, 1999. And so some of those devotees, of course, went to other moths, the Gaudiya moth. Some of those devotees are into the hard rhythmic or hanging in that way. Some devotees just completely left in the entire Vaishnava alignment. Some devotees have taken to legal cases due to the child abuse. So there's so many fragmentations in so many ways. And so many people are wondering, what is our future? Because there are so many underlying intentions, so many that have also surfaced. And so obviously there are many reasons for such, and we'll have chance to look at that. But first I think we need to look very general as we begin to come in in a more particular way. I think we need to look at just what is this society that we have joined. Now we've joined this International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And by Sukriti, Jnana Sukriti, and especially by Prasad, by mercy, we have all come together, try to purify ourselves and to ultimately go back to spiritual kingdom. But I think we need first to look at certain things. We need to look at just what is our understanding of ISKCON, what is our understanding of our particular governance, our governing body. What is our understanding of our relationships in terms of our families, grihastha ashram? What is our relationship to or for our children? What is our relationship to each other, to the secular world also? So I'd like to spend about 5 or 10 minutes just looking at these things as we set a stage for our discussion. Because I think a significant amount of our problems are due to some of these basic considerations. As we have a deeper appreciation of who we are, what we're supposed to be, then we can understand a little bit more about what we're supposed to do. If we're not so sure about our identity, then it brings in more of the kind of yata mata tata pata, because it's a lack of certainty. Where there is ambiguity, there's always influences of Maya that come in. Literally, ambiguity, nebulousness, something that's unhealthy for bhakti. Because for bhakti, we're not really so much trying to come up to something, but we're trying to experience what is already there. And so we're trying to see what is to be removed to experience the higher realities. And so if we're not so clear about our field of activities, we're not so clear about where we are, and of course how to get there, then it becomes more and more difficult in terms of how to focus. And we definitely cannot break through the molds of material nature without intense focus. So without intense and utsaha, enthusiasm, focus, and support, it becomes very difficult. And any effort will turn into a certain amount of frustration and anxiety, and even defeat. So let us share from yourselves just what is your idea of ISKCON. What do you think ISKCON is supposed to do? Is it a community that is mainly a monastic community? Is it a community that's responsible for its own immediate members in our temples and our monasteries and our mandirs? Is that its primary duty? It's a secondary duty? It's its congregation? What responsibility do we really have for secular world? I mean, just in its brief terms, as expressions you can offer, you can explain what you feel is the duty of the members of ISKCON. Yes. Okay, to re-spiritualize the world. Yes. Build a house in which the whole world can live in. Okay. Can we all hear? Bring the chanting of the holy names to every town, every village. Be a real family. Facilitate the loving exchange. Anyone have a negative instruction with them by chance? Yes, Rukmini, can you get it for us? Okay. So we'll come to that soon. Yes. Maharaj, yes, you're ready. Ready. So we need to speak a lot louder, huh?
Yeah, I don't know, because not everyone is used to speak loud, so that's the problem.
Okay, so let us all try to speak louder, because everyone's offering is important.
Yeah.
We're not here to lecture, but to try to stimulate interchange. It's unfortunate we don't have a microphone and we could pass it around, but we'll try to speak louder, and maybe tomorrow we'll make the circle smaller and we'll come a little closer. Yes. Sense control, mind control, Vaishnava Sangha. Society of Brahmins, give head to society. Anyone else? Yes. Okay, facilitate people this age, get in touch with the higher reality. Spiritual association, yes. Accept people for who they are and where they are. Different ideas. Maybe one or two more? Yes. Revise our spiritual identities. So you can see, as we express different ideas, we're expressing things that we've read, things we've heard, some things that perhaps we would like ISKCON to be based on our perception. And most of the, practically 98% of all that was said, we'll find in Prabhupada's books, his conversations, on his tapes. But we do hone in to the fact that we are supposed to make the message available every town and every village. We do find that we are supposed to re-spiritualize society. We do find that we are a society for coming together to be able to enthuse each other spiritually as we do these things. So that means then that we have a tremendous responsibility about our own infrastructure and how we extend that to the world. So we are not just a kind of a philanthropic or social movement that we're just trying to deal with social issues. Or are we just a philosophy where we are discussing philosophy amongst ourselves or even with others? But it is a cultural movement. And so Prabhupada said it's a cultural movement for re-spiritualizing society. So it means it deals with everything. Culture deals with our eating, sleeping, mating, and the way that we perceive or the way that we defend, and then how we are to share that with others. So when we first then look at what our identity is, we see that it's awesome, that we are supposed to be working very deeply on ourselves, where our life become our message, in such a way that we influence the world. So we're not just to influence the world and not to walk our talk amongst ourselves, or are we supposed to be so into ourselves that we do not penetrate the atmosphere? So this is foremost important, which means that we are to be spiritually astute with purity as a force, and at the same time, we are to have ability to be relevant to society or to the world. Otherwise, how do we change people if we're not able to be relevant? In other words, to carry the message through so that they can hear it, that they can see that it is for them, and so that they can change their lives. See, if we were more of a kind of a monastic society, then we'd be more into our own purity, or more into sort of a moksha consciousness, and whatever the fallout of that is to others, that's okay. But our whole movement is so much based on trying to grow and to become while simultaneously trying to share. So Prabhupada expressed that we are to be gentlemen or gentlewomen, so that people who maybe cannot always understand our philosophy, but there will be so many other things they can understand as we are moral, as we're ethical, as we're pious, as we create value based on whatever that we do that helps to raise consciousness. And so therefore we see we have Food for Life, we have Harinam, we have communication programs, we have book distribution, we have community development, etc. So literally, we are supposed to have different types of weapons that will reach everyone. Some people will be more influenced, of course, by the fact that they are looking for wealth. And so although that is not our main consideration, be concerned about people's material desires, but we are supposed to be the well-wishers. Like the Goswamis, they were Lokanamitakarinatribhuvane. They were merciful to all. And so they were building the temples, they were dealing with the royal class, at the same time the ruffians. So some people, they will come to transcendence because they're looking for wealth. Others who are distressed. So we are supposed to be the people who can help those who are pious, who are coming because they're distressed. Or some are curious, inquisitive. And then rare categories, those who come for knowledge. So that means that we are supposed to actually be the people who have a transcendental understanding, presentation, and life commitment dealing with everything. So it's quite an awesome task. We may say, well, if you make it too big, how can you do anything? Well, if it's on us, then we're in trouble. But for Lord Chaitanya, who's come, Namo Dhamma Vedanaya Krishna Prema Padayate, Krishna, Krishna, Chaitanya, Namna, Gaura, Dazay, Namha, who is come in his most magnanimous form at this time, when people's ability to understand is at its lowest ebb, the ability to maintain false ego and to be attached to sense gratification is extremely high. But therefore, the greater amount of mercy is there if one can connect with that mercy. So sometimes this is a problem because sometimes we are either thinking in a myopic way or we are running after so many reactive things due to how we've boxed ourselves in minimizing the Lord's mercy and minimizing the call that we have and also minimizing the position that we are often like the sparrow. The sparrow who is trying to retrieve her eggs, so it is practically an impossibility what she's trying to do. Almost an impossibility. But because of the sincerity and the purity or the dedication and the extreme focus, therefore Garuda comes to help. So our task is awesome, but we are like the ponds. We are like the little sparrows. That if we do what is necessary, then the help will come. That we recognize the task, yes, is extremely difficult. It is extremely vast, but almost impossible. But the transcendence is always there to make that which seems to be almost impossible, to make it probable and a reality. So when we join this society, we are joining to work on ourselves. We're joining to raise the environment in our immediate circles and temples. We're trying to develop more sense of understanding and empowerment to really to create a spiritual revolution on the planet. And this is what Lord Chaitanya's mission is. It is bringing aspects of the spiritual world into the material world as it is ultimately propagated by Nitya Siddhas, so that we can go back to Godhead, so that seeds can be planted, we can be prepared to go back to Godhead later, so that mercy is there. Lord Nityananda, Lord Chaitanya was not so much concerned about qualifications, but get everybody at least chance. So this is what we're doing. Our duty is to try to go back to Godhead. Krishna has come to reclaim souls and to plant seeds so that others can have more chance to be able to go back. So we are also representing Lord Chaitanya's mood. So our position is to try to reclaim those souls, claim ourselves to go back, and to make an environment that makes it more likely for people to elevate themselves so that they can go back with all haste. So we're looking at a huge picture of what our particular call is. Now we look at the governance. So we are governed by a governing body commission, and that's a particular type of material governance as well as spiritual. First, as we look at different types of governance, we have capitalism and democracies. So democracy is one of the most dangerous systems in some ways because it has the illusion of the people being responsible for government. While although people are thinking that way, there's an elite that makes the major decisions. It's like where there are democracies, there's a certain amount of funds, certain amount of capital that you must have to run for governor, for vice president, for senator. If you can't raise a certain amount, there's no even question about you being a serious contender. So a lot of that still has to do with power, influence, capital. And so where it seems that the people are really governing, that they're not. And as we often call it, a demon craziness, because of what so-called the majority becomes the rule of law. If you take a group of children, you ask them how many days they would like to go to school, and they may come up with one or two days a week. Now, because they decided like that, doesn't mean it is the best for them, even though it is the consensus of the majority opinion. So democracy may have a consensus of the masses, but even with that, there is elitist order that usually is making the major decisions. Then we have, of course, communism. And so communism is where there is political parties supposedly representing the people, but also, again, you have elitist order where it is not necessarily dealing with the real needs and concerns of the people. And, of course, from our perspective, we see that communism ultimately is not based on any theistic considerations. So we know that such governance, where you want to push out God and try to create the greatest good for people without knowing the greatest needs, their greater sense of identity, we understand that there will just be failure. We look at socialism, where the people have fully gained control over the institutions, the means of production, etc., which is somewhat theoretical because we've never really seen that. But in an ideal sense, where people are really controlling, not a party, but the people. But we see again, but without God-centeredness and without an understanding of what the real goals of life, then what will happen? Just dabbling in relative transitory considerations. Well, then we see the Vedas recommends monarchy. We understand that of all the systems, monarchy is the best, but it is also the most dangerous of any system. Because in the autocratic system, if the monarch, of course, is benevolent, then it's like a mother or a father who is able to inspire the whole family to complementary, to do things together for the benefit of the family. And so in that sense, where monarch is inspired by the devas, inspired by the Lord, then there is blessings that is constantly coming, and so much that being received and being passed on for the benefit of the people. But when the monarch is not necessarily empowered, benevolent, God-inspired, Krishna-inspired, then becomes a tyrant or tyranny. And so this is the first thing second thing we should tune into, is that the system that we have connected with is the most powerful for re-spiritualizing the planet. But when abused, it becomes the most dangerous. Like we see in our guru-disciple relationship, or our general relationship of student to teacher, or our relationship to authority, is that we are so much on a paradigm of submissiveness, humility, as we are trying to accept some instruction, some guidance, etc. And so we train ourselves in how to be receptive in such ways. We train ourselves how to honor superiors, etc. And so that is wonderful. Again, when there is the God-centered focus, and when not, then it can set up an arena for the greatest abuse, exploitation, etc. And we see how the Vedic system, and when it's abused, creates sahajism, creates caste Brahmanism, or caste consciousness. We see how the Samatha Brahmanas and others have come from that. And so, where it has an amazing ability to heal the planet, but when abused, it becomes the greatest fragmentation, exploitation to women, to children, to people of different orders, etc. And so this is why sometimes people become very afraid when they hear of anything that's Vedic. They mainly think of various types of exploitations, etc. Now, our particular ISKCON is governed by what is called an oligarchy. An oligarchy is one of the closest things to monarchy, except in a monarchy you have one, or you have supreme power in the royal family, or etc. But in an oligarchy, it's a little similar, for lack of a good example, it's a little similar to like Catholic Church, where you have a group of cardinals, or a group of bishops. So you have a lot of little monarchs, in one sense. And now the difference between an oligarchy and a democracy is, in a democracy, the people come together and they vote, and they kind of make the decisions, as we said. But in an oligarchy, the decisions are actually made by those who are on the board, or by those who are in the group, and they make the decisions amongst themselves. So amongst themselves, they choose chairman, they choose vice chairman. It's not that when we have chairman or vice chairman, we make an appeal to the whole ISKCON society, and then we have vote. No, we have the GBCs, and then amongst ourselves, we make executive committee, and amongst ourselves, we make certain resolutions, and then we make them available to the deputies and the presidents and the managers. But basically, it is a group of monarchs, like monarchs amongst themselves, who make decisions. So where the most powerful is the one monarch or royal family, when it is divinely inspired, and that becomes the most dangerous. And also second most powerful becomes oligarchy, but becomes the second most dangerous if it is not properly divinely inspired. And this is why some people are more into democracy, because it kind of spreads the fault around, or it kind of hopes that the majority of people are a little sensitive and will be sharp enough to make right decisions, or that what the majority of people do usually is for the greatest good of the largest number of people. So we move then from ISKCON, designed to re-spiritualize the world in a grand scale. We work on our inner structure as well as exterior. We move to how it is governed by, like, a group of monarchs who make various decisions. And so we see the power in that when the spiritual connection is sufficient, and when not, then we can understand the dangers, real as well also potential. Let us go on to looking at our relationship to our families. So as we look, you know, first at the Grihastha community, what basically is our position as Grihasthas, as ISKCON or Krishna conscious, trying to be Krishna conscious families? What is our duty? Husband to wife, wife to husband. Just, you know, what is our sense of identity? What are we as grihasthas in terms of our Krishna consciousness? If that makes any sense. But let's share what you think. What is our duty, our identity? It's grihasthas. So who are we? What are we doing? What is our position? Why are we together? Yes. Caretakers, service to each other for Krishna. Anyone else? Okay. Once it's no different than any other ashram, we're trying to be Krishna conscious. Yes? To bring forth Krishna conscious children, protect them. Providers for the other ashrams, the rest of society. Anyone else? Examples? We all to be examples. Any other? This is we think of our own identity. I mean, we're all in this now. We're all here in ISKCON, and we're under this governance, and we're in different ashrams. So we want to think a little bit about who are we? What are we? And what are we trying to become so that we can move faster in trying to reach those particular goals? Keep in mind that when we take the Krishna conscience, we are engaging in our battle of Kurukshetras. Our major book is Bhagavad Gita. And so we have different wars to fight. And we have various field of activities. The more we can understand the field of activity, then the more we can excel and trying to appreciate that where Krishna and Arjuna is, and there is victory. So we want to see how to bring more Krishna into our lives. We understand poverty and liberty, like our nectar devotion. It's giving us so many things that we are to do in the process of sadhana bhakti. We also have so many things that we're supposed to avoid. And they go hand in hand. If we only know what is to be done, then we will have trouble when the negative things surround us. We will play into them because we will not know how to avoid them, or we will not be able to recognize them. If we only know what is negative, then we will not be able to understand what is to do, what is positive. So our process is very practical, and it has this sense of identity, of to fear the Maya, so we run away from it, to have the goal in mind, so we know how to run to it faster. Prabhupada makes many, many statements. One or two I'll share with all the ones that you shared. In Bhagavatam 3:23, he says, the wife is dependent upon the husband, and if the husband is a Vaishnava, then naturally she shares the devotional service of the husband. She renders him service. The reciprocation, of service and love between husband and wife is the ideal of a householder's life. The reciprocation of service, of course service to Sadhu, to Guru, to Krishna, love, between themselves, between the community, is the idea of household life. Prabhupada says, so householder life is not condemned. It is required. If there is no householders, then where from the saintly persons will come? They will not drop from the sky. So we see the quality of household life, the quality of the environment, determines the kind of souls that we elicit who come into this world. We also remind ourselves that in Kali Yuga, it is an injunction that one should not take to sannyas. But there's no injunction that one should not take to grihastha life. So therefore, the orthodox or the normal mode of activity for Kali Yuga is distinctly a grihastha lifestyle. But of course, we are called by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda that to take to renounce order of life as we try to embark upon preaching, and as we try to embark upon getting the mercy to be able to carry such out. But this is somewhat exceptional. But the normative scheme, of course, is the grihastha ashram. Now, based on that, I think we can make a bold statement here, which we'd like you to reflect on and think about it by the time we are through with some of these discussions. As a as ISKCON, as a society that is supposed to re-spiritualize the planet, then we're really talking about, you know, massive effects, social, political, economic, etc. And we're talking about influencing the minds of millions and billions of people. So as we look at that, we realize that as we look at millions and billions of people, we're mainly talking in most part about families. And there are exceptions, but we're mainly talking about families. Therefore, to have a successful plan, it inherently must give its greater attention to its customers or to its constituents, which is mainly families ultimately. So we may say that the Grihastha Ashram, in developing great expansion of Krishna consciousness, as well as maintaining in internal purity, that the most important ashram is the household ashram. We may say the most spiritual is the sannyasi or renounce, hopefully. But the most important, as we talk about many people, expansions, and development, etc., is the Grihastha Ashram. So if in our institution, what we're to spread to the whole world is not somewhat focusing and giving support for such, then there will be some inherent failures. And many problems we have are in a line to, this is one of the reasons we have certain underlining problems, etc. As now we see all over the world, so many householders are struggling trying to get a balance to deal with their spiritual life and their economic concerns, emotional, psychological, social, etc. And many times they have to do this pretty much on their own. What is our responsibility, very briefly, to our children? What is our responsibility to our children? Here we are, ISKCON community, and we have children, yes. Yes, protection, obviously. Educate, yes. So all of these, one more, Yes, all of these things. Now, Prabhupada explained that the children of our children, that is first generation, that our children's children is where we will see an astounding amount of purity. So in many ways, we can say that we are to lay the ground. It is not so easy, first generation, to try to do this big re-spiritualization, although possible to do so many things. But we understand that some things will in fact happen in stages. We can see that in some ways, initially we may have been very naive. We first joined the movement. We were 19, 20, 23, 24 years old. When in many places, the oldest person in the earlier days was 24 or 25 years old. So where we are moving around the countries in vans and showering in very austere arrangements, sleeping in austere arrangements, and being excited about the adventure of the risk that we're taking in so many ways for preaching, the adventures of going many different places. And then, of course, we get a little older, or we marry, and then we start having children, and then we start having grandchildren. So obviously the mind begins to shift. Or as we get older, you know, as renunciates, and we start looking closer at the fact that, you know, this body is falling apart, and we want to commit ourselves as much as we can before we have to leave this body. But in a culture, or as you mentioned, in a family, we're a Krishna-conscious family, and we want to always keep that in mind as we are discussing about Musi community and building up. We're really talking about re-spiritualization. We're talking about a family that Srila Prabhupada has given us. special flavor to it, but it's a family. And so many problems that we have faced in the past, that we're facing now, and many of those that are around the corner, could be so easier solved if we would approach them from the perspective of a spiritual family. In a family, there are always differences, there are issues, there are crises. But in a healthy family, at the end of the day, we're looking to see is what is going to improve and enhance the quality of the family. What can we do that will please a mother or father? What can we do that is going to guarantee the success, the achievements of the family in such ways? And so things are put on the table, things are discussed openly, where there's weaknesses, others come to compliment, where there is a problem, others are concerned, where there's an issue, everyone sees it as part of the issue. See, there's a big problem we're having in our society, is that we're seeing things too much in fragmentations. We often see something as a brahmachari problem, grihastha problem, a gurukula problem, a GBC problem, a guru problem, a European problem, an American problem, an Indian problem, a Ritvic problem, a this problem. We see things like that. And because we so often see the issues in such ways, then we try to resolve them with the same kind of sectarian, myopic view. Without seeing some of the variables that have produced these problems, or without seeing how one thing is connected with another. And so at the end of the day, we wind up putting a lot of energy, a lot of fire, tend to put a lot of fires in certain ways, and then at the end of the day, we find that there's another one to put out, another one, etc. And so this can also cause us to minimize sometimes some of the underlying issues. See, there's a fire. Say if two boys over here are starting fires here in the Dom. So we get a crew together and we start finding ways how to put out the fires better. First we're using small buckets, bigger buckets. Then we're using hose. And then we get a truck with a hose. So we can find better ways to put some of the trying to figure out what this next fire is going to be. What's the strategy of this? But we can better to look and see what's really causing it and deal with that. So a lot of the fragmentations, they stop us from looking at some of the bottom underlying issues. So a lot of energy goes into things and you get lots and lots of frustration. Now, one last thing we want to ask in this series of questions is, what is our responsibility to other institutions, other religions, or we can just say other people in general? I mean, what do we have to do with such people? Like the Christians and the Muslims and the Baha'is and the Buddhists. What do we have to do with people who are atheistic? What is our involvement with such people? Anyone? Yes. Set good examples. Anyone else? Give them prasada. Yes. Seek peace.
Showing concern
show them something higher. Yes. These kind of considerations. Prabhupada used to tell us about preaching at the universities, not to preach that it's rules and regulations, but to go and show them that it's a higher philosophy. People do not just want to hear, don't do this, don't do that. Because people are very selfish. And they mainly want to find something better for themselves. So if we can show them something better, that'll be better for their well-being, then people will take more advantage of Krishna consciousness. Also, we see that we have a responsibility to help raise people from one mode to the higher, to transcendence. The idea of Varnashram Dharma system has a lot of ways of engaging all people so they feel that Krishna is for them to some extent. And so as they involve themselves, then some purity sets in and they move from the mode of ignorance, the mode of passion, the mode of goodness to the transcendental state. Or if the president or the prime minister of a country became a Hare Krishna devotee, you think about it. what would be his or her responsibility? Prabhupada explains that such person's responsibility would not actually be to demand that everyone become a Hare Krishna. That should tell us something. Our duty would be surely to make Krishna consciousness available for everyone and to try to show them why it's something higher. But our duty would be to try to set systems in practice, in motion, so that everyone who is following a bona fide religion is following it in a bona fide way. So that means that devotees are supposed to be of such a nature that we are to be able to live transcendental lifestyle, while at the same time being able to invoke and invite as many people as possible to follow as we're doing, but at the same time to be of such respect, to be so appreciated, to have for people to have us so much in awe that they are ready to take counsel from us in almost every area. And so therefore we are able to inspire those who engage in some kind of pious religious activities to be more genuine in their particular efforts. Once again, we see quite a holistic and awesome task. That one, if we're not so genuine and fixed ourselves, then it'll simply be hypocritical. Or if we're not understanding what we have as we deal with others, we'll simply get splayed out and we'll become more like what we're dealing with than being able to share what we have or stimulate. At the same time, if we just stay amongst ourselves, then we're not doing what we're supposed to do. Sometimes our problems are so intense because we're so boxed in, looking only at our little temple's problems or our zone problems or even our movement's problems. And then because of that, then we are dealing with similar kind of variables and getting frustrated. Sometimes, while we are putting, of course, out the fires, because some fires are very serious, but if we're not simultaneously engage in more productive and proactive things, will still be defeated. Because some problems will only be eradicated as there are more positive things to replace. It's like now we have a tremendous crisis in faith all around our movement. The last 2 years, the general faith of devotees is just going down fast. And so we can do so many things and trying to patch that up. But in some, all that has to go on in some ways. But in many cases, faith is not going to get stronger until people are able to see Krishna consciousness working in a much more productive way. And then they'll feel better about being a part of society. They'll feel more inspired to make their commitment, because we all want to be a part of something successful. How enthused is one going to feel? A person comes to the temple they've been living in for 10 years, and now there used to be 100 devotees, and now there's 20 devotees, and 10 of those devotees are thinking about leaving, and then 5 of those devotees are just basically there because they don't have anything else to do, and 4 other devotees are engaged in gross sinful activities, and then he hears a Bhagavatam class about how wonderful Krishna consciousness is, how powerful it is. And he's thinking, yeah, but where is it working? Then he thinks about the next temple, and that temple is having a problem that they're about to lose the building because they can't pay the taxes, they can't pay the mortgage. And then he looks about this other place, and 3 or 4 gurus have fallen down. And so the devotee is supposed to hear the Gita class, hear the Bhagavatam class, and feel inspired. Well, faith, obviously, is not something that we can fake. And faith, blind faith, produces more blindness. And it turns into another kind of emotional response, the opposite sometimes later. But our faith becomes very strong, especially when our past has been inspiring. What is happening to us presently, we feel good about. Then we can feel enthused as we try to anticipate what's going to happen in the future. But if our past has been pretty, a lot of incoherence, if our present is full of fragmentations, then how one is going to have strong faith? In most cases, it will be very, very difficult. Because we come in with something, we come in with certain credits, and that's going to give us a certain amount of strength to bounce back. But as we keep bouncing back and so many present things are not so wonderful, then after a while, our faith gets weaker and weaker. And the danger in that is that when our faith gets weaker, our ability to really take shelter of the transcendental system, of the parampara system, it becomes minimized. So this is why we have now more devotees divorcing. Our divorce rate, our divorce in the last few years has expanded all the world in most places in the most amazing way. We have people now been married for 20, 25 years who are divorcing. And in some cases, they wake up one day and one or both parties have entered into Maya. And so the Krishna factor that mainly was able to keep them together no longer is so much important. And so now, as one has entered more into wanting to associate with Maya, now they want a partner who they can express or experience that Maya with, and that devotee partner they have doesn't have so much relevance anymore. So we'll see how, in many cases, divorces are expanding, as increasing as the faith goes down. Then one begins to look for other types of ways for fulfillment, because ruchi, the taste, must be there. If it's not coming from the connection of serving Krishna together, sadhu guru, then they will go in other areas. So let's look real brief at what we knew as the old ISKCON in contrast to what we see as the new ISKCON. What's some like distinct differences of the old ISKCON that we have sort of now left, we're leaving behind? There was so much more of excitement about preaching, a much greater focus. Yes, intense dedication to Srila Prabhupada's mission.
More acceptance of people, what they were.
More acceptance for people? Yes. Maharaj? More governed from the top? Okay. More trust, I would say, in government from the top down?
More love amongst the devotees.
More love amongst the devotees? Not so much long-term planning. Some planning with short-term. Prabhupada, extreme top.
More unity.
More unity, more family. Okay, any others? Let's look at the newest con that we are now in and what seems to be unfolding. Yes.
We kind of felt that, real soon we're about ready to kind of conquer the world.
Yes.
We're very optimistic. Very soon, Krishna consciousness is
just going to. Yes, there was this great enthusiasm that we're going to become Krishna conscious tomorrow, and the next day we're going to save the whole world. Yes. Okay. Interesting perspective. She's probably one of the older devotees, her and Pacharatna in the room. She said, so sometimes we have this romantic idea about the old days. Some things weren't quite as we may have thought they were. There always were various types of problems. Yes. Hasta ashram, especially now, is becoming more independent and trying to find ways to find things for themselves.
ISKCON nowadays is looking more towards the integration society. Before then, it was more taking people out of society.
Before we were taking more people out, and now some of those people we're sending back, or we're going back ourselves. She's saying that it's a new bhakti. She's saying it's hard to be like a new bhakti because everybody's doing their things. And their survival issues or their political issues or whatever, or their spiritual issues. Okay. Yes. So, you know, it means different things to all of us. And all of those things, there's no right or wrong answer fully. But we do know that there's never been a time that there wasn't a lot of problems. We just look at some of Prabhupada's letters, and we see constantly how there were problems on every level. There were constant deviations, fall downs from the highest to the lowest levels. That sometimes Prabhupada wasn't able to even to, you know, do his translation, because of some of the problems that were going on. But still, as you were saying, but because Prabhupada was there, things were more under control or checked, balance the system was stronger. We were younger, so we had more zeal, more enthusiasm, and also more naivety. At the same time, we can say that in some ways that the material degradation has increased. That the Maya that we're having to deal with now within the secular world is actually intensified than that 20 years ago. We see people who are joining now. They're bringing so much more complexities, because they're born at a time that more and more issues in the secular community and also in the spiritual community. Now when someone joins, they're having to deal with so many things that they're hearing, so many problems, so many different political persuasions, etc. It's dangerous in some ways, because it can chase people away, or we can get people who just learn how, you know, not to think. And so they just blot everything out. Or people try to think about everything, and then they also go batty. Or we create a situation where people come forward, but because of all they're hearing, they never fully give themselves, because they're always paranoid about things that they've heard. And so the environment, of course, affects us all in different ways. But we can think more about that a little more, because there's so many things. We're just throwing out a few things, but there's so many things you can think about each of these issues. The oldest con, the newest con. I mean, now there's also much more competition in, you know, spiritual communities. There's so many other alternatives, you know, spiritual organizations. Somebody wants to join, then they may think, well, why should I join this society when I can join another society where I don't have to do this or do that? Why join another society that has a stronger economic and social structure? Why join another spiritual organization where there is greater chance for education for my children, or this or that? So there's so many, many things that are there that we're now dealing, you know, in the new, the new ISKCON. So we're at a time when, although we have more facilities, but in some ways we're financially weaker. At a time that we have, you know, so many devotees, but then the more there is diversity, when the nucleus is weaker, then the more diversity, the more chaos, or the more problems. The nucleus is strong, then the more diversity, then the more synergy, the more symbiotic, more complements, etc. So, because the nucleus is getting weaker, then we have diversity amongst first generation and second. Sometimes we treat second generation like the second class citizens. Sometimes we have more fragmentations between what part of the world. So you're from in America. Sometimes you're from the South. You're from the North, or you're from India, or you're from Europe. Or sometimes we're having fragmentations and who is your guru? Or sometimes we're having fragmentations and now when the women and men women. So this is, of course, Kali capitalizing off the fact that diversity is always there. But when the unity is not sufficient, then where there's diversity, it creates a greater arena for our destabilization. I want to rush through a few things, because we only got about 15 minutes more. And as I said, the next few days we're going to do more interactive things. So now that everyone knows everyone, from those quick introductions, we'll pair off into maybe about five different groups tomorrow as we try to hone in on a few things. But we want to discuss a little bit about community. Because, see, there's different ways to look at community. We have such thing as community by accident. We have community by circumstance, or we have or by some crisis. So we can say community by accident, one, community by crisis or some mitigating circumstance. We have a community by force, and we also have actually a design or well thought out sense of community. So now only the real design or thought out community is really community. Other communities are actually pseudo communities. When you have community by accident, people kind of come together and they find themselves having to do some things together. And just as they come together, they can also separate, because it's not such a significant part of their identity, you know, to be together. When you have community by crisis, people get motivated and enthused, and they get together based on some crisis. As soon as the crisis is over, then they turn against each other, or they play out, etc. They go into their own sovereignty. And then we have community by force. If that pressure of danger or force isn't there, then again, people lose a sense of identity of really working together. So in our Krishna conscious system, we really have community by design, because we are really coming together to try to practice more and more what we are to eternally do and to become. So if our practice isn't profound, then we are kidding ourselves about what we are really trying to become, or thinking that we can attain that. See, it's not that we can fight like anything, like hell amongst ourselves. We commit all kind of uprods. We have all kind of sectarianism. We have all types of weakness of faith. And somehow we're going to leave this body and we're going to go to the spiritual world. We can't live a life of so much duality, embracing duality, so much mode of ignorance and mode of passion and even mode of goodness, and think that, okay, now we're going to go back to the spiritual world. One of the things that should happen when we come to the holy dhams, or we live in the holy dhams, is a time that we should be thinking more and more about our real identity. As we visit these second pilgrimage places, it's time to remind us what happened there. Who are these people? What Leela of Krishna's took place? What servants of Krishna? What did they do? How did they think? How did they interact? These are real beings. And so how they have brought spiritual culture, transcendental culture, available to us. So that means then, in essence, that Prabhupada has arranged for us to come together, to purify each other, and to gradually to become what we are going to eternally be. So, in other words, we are really supposed to gradually begin to move away from the ahankar, our false ego, our false identity of the gender, of the race, the nationality, certain sovereign interests. And we're gradually supposed to let that fall to the side until we're developing a real sense of not playing into the duality. So we get many, 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 many chances and many, many challenges and many, many tests constantly, and they must be there. That's why sometimes we have more problems when we come into a spiritual community than we ever had in our whole life. And that's actually there, because now we're trying to give up all the gross and the subtle stuff that's been with us in this lifetime and previous lifetimes, and we're trying now to become pure agents, unmotivated servants of Krishna. And so in order for that to happen, all of our desires must come before us to see if we really want these other things or whether we want Krishna. So in one sense, the problems in a transcendental environment must be there, because now we are shedding, and it's like a hospital where we're getting ready and taking our last examinations, our last medication, our last therapy. And in doing that, we have all kind of fears, doubts, problems, stagnations, all kind of unusual associations, some of them positive, some of them negative, and one has to move through all of that. So Maya is arranging many fields of activities based on what each person is needing and then collectively what is needed. So this is why it seems like all hell breaks loose when we take to transcendental life, because now people are coming together with the idea of trying to put behind them all other things as secondary and only want Krishna. So sometimes Krishna, through Akinchana, arranges to take everything away to see, now are you really ready for me? So if you analyze it, that means, to a certain extent, institutions must disappoint us. Because we must come to a point where we are not just depending on the institution. And what does that mean? Yes, this institution is Prabhupada's major offering. But his offering, the essence of it, is for everyone to give up sense gratification and to fall back in love with the divine couple. So sometimes we hide behind the security of the institution, we hide behind positions, we hide behind seniority, we hide behind all kinds of things. So Krishna will arrange to do and take some of those things away so that we can come more heartful to Him. But if our most genuine desire isn't to come with full heart, then as He starts taking some things away, we'll get taken away by the Maya. So to a certain extent, everyone will have to be dealing with their battle of Kurukshetra, where Krishna is giving and Krishna is taking and Krishna is arranging. See, we're not just a religion where we're trying to now have peace, but we're trying to have transcendence. So therefore, as we were trying to have peace, we're trying to do many things that just could allow us to peacefully coexist so we could enjoy sense gratification comfortably. So many people, they take to religion because they want God to remove the obstacles that's interfering with their sense gratification, rather than really wanting to receive all of Krishna's love and give all of their love. So because now it's like the last examination, so all this stuff has to come out and come forward, so we have an arena in our association where all this is coming forward, and if our faith is weak, and all the shake-ups is going on in so many ways, we get shaken up in the process. And that is what is most important and why community is so important, because so many people would and could be stronger if the general culture of the spiritual community is more supportive, then they'll be less likely to play in to some of their own weaknesses or to pass sense gratification desires. We see when we lose our enthusiasm, we lose our faith, immediately the mind starts going back into past securities. So we have many people now, hundreds and thousands of people, who are sort of becoming stagnant, or they're going back into past secure temporary situations because they do not feel the security amongst or within the Vaishnava community. And of course, some rare souls can go on regardless to, you know, whatever is happening. But in most cases, people, we are social beings. See, everything is sambandha. We cannot get away from relationship. Everything we do is relationship. It's a matter of the quality of relationship. So we have real community. We must have, we say in community we see unity. There must be serious unity and not just conformity. You can have some forced artificial conformity, but if it's not belief in people's hearts to do that, they're not feeling the value of it, it will be temporary and they will not give themselves fully. So there must be this unity. So community, there must be first genuine, open, honest, revealing communication. We don't have that in a family or in a temple or in a project, a pseudo community, and everyone's going to suffer because the general environment is not going to be sufficiently supportive. And people are saying one thing, meaning something else, when they're posturing, when there's so much secrecy. So in general, we should be making pledges and vows to minimize confidentiality. In other words, as we have more of a healthy family, then what we're feeling, what we're needing, what our problems are, we should be more able to openly express them, because if we're in pain or if we're in doubt, we should be able to express it so we can get help. When you love someone, you want to know, what does your beloved need? What is your beloved, where is she or her at, or the child, so that you can be there to facilitate. But when there is insecurity or improper communication, then, or pseudo-community, then people are afraid to really mention what they're feeling or to explain their ideas or aspirations, because they do not feel that maybe they'll be appreciated, or maybe they will be used against them, or maybe it'll take away their artificial position, or so many things. And therefore, we have what happens in this kind of lot. Somebody's suffering, somebody's struggling, somebody's tripping, somebody's falling, and they're hiding it or hiding behind situations until they completely fall on their face. And then we look and we think, oh, what has happened? But if the environment could be more spiritually conducive, more sense of love and care, then we could be able to catch and shelter many people before they go into that space where they become a total embarrassment. So open and honest communication is extremely important. Also, community is there with cooperation. It cannot just be so much each zone, each project, each department for itself. Yes, there should be some autonomy so that people have great interest and they focus on their thing is most important, but not that it becomes a sabotaging or a minimalization of others. But again, it becomes a sense of diversity, but at the same time, with powerful, powerful unity. And then there must be a sense of powerful communion, and that is our sadhu sangha, that we do these things together, the ninefold process. Not that we read about this, we speak about it, but then, especially ourselves as leaders, but then we do not follow it. So how can we encourage you to chant your 16 rounds? How can we encourage you to come to the class, if in fact the leader himself does not come? Then it's sending a message that is not so important, or sending a message that is important for you because you're a neophyte, but later you don't have to do it. It's like the parent who smokes cigarettes in the kami world. They tell the child, don't smoke. So the message they're sending is that you cannot smoke now because you are too young, but as you are matured, then you can smoke. So therefore, the action is being transmitted more than the verbal exchange. So in many ways, we're sending a constant message that's destabilizing our spiritual culture by sometimes what we as leaders do, even though we may speak something in Bhagavatam class, Bhagavad Gita class, we may even speak in darshan, but then by our actions, we're sending out the biggest message. And so that either is going to help to revitalize community or is going to destabilize the community. If we're reading something and discussing something, but we have no life, then we will not be able to give other people life. You know, we are all working on spiritual nourishment. So somebody can give some class and they can quote so many verses, but if they have no life, they're not going to give you very much life. And then gradually you get weakness and doubts and fears, because bhakti breeds bhakti, maya brings maya, etc. So we're kind of running out of time. What we want to do tomorrow, I'm going to give you an assignment, and then we're going to go into some deeper things about the community and assemble in a few groups as we discuss some particular pinpointed things. There are many, many things we can discuss in these few days, and we're going to try to do it based on the sort of conscious energy of the room. So we had you to mention where you're from and what you do, so I got a general idea of the Msikitri we have here, the combination of devotees, so that we can start to take it in a direction that will be stimulating to us all, but at the same time be relevant, you know, to our situations. What we would like you each to do tomorrow is that we would like you sometime between tonight and tomorrow when you come here again, that to speak with someone who you feel knows you pretty well. This is to help us focus on creating more sense of a genuine music community, where we are able to sort of be there more for each other, to communicate in a more honest and sincere effort. Because if this major thing isn't there, then so many things are circuitous, so many things are not relevant, not addressing the real issues, or minimizes the essence. But the more that we are having healthy, open communication, then Krishna just comes through in so many, many more ways. Because then there's less aparads, there's less anarthas, there is more dedication in the genuine sense, there's more sense of enthusiasm. Like tomorrow we'll discuss a little bit about the nectar devotion, because there's some of the same things that makes the individual stronger or helps the individual to advance, that are the same things that will help the community to advance. Some of the same things that causes fall down. Vinashati. Achahara payasyas cha pajapa niyamagraha. Gana sangha shalo kasabhya bhakti vinashati. Same things that causes the individual to become stagnant and to fall are same things that affects the community. See, the community is like a special bija. It's like we have, you know, Karma Beach, Jnana Beach, and we have the Bhakti, Mzilata Beach. Or we can see the community, something like a new Bhakti or a Bhaktin. It has a life of its own, and it goes through different stages of growth and maturation. Different things stimulate that growth. Different things weaken growth. Different things devastate the particular bija. And so as we are able to become aware of that, then we can see why community goes in different cycles, in different stages, why there's a general, sometimes depression, general anxiety, why there are times offenses seem to be greater, why the bhajapa seems, you know, to be more extensive. So we see the community is like something that's alive. See, everything is really alive when you think about it. You know, the planet's alive, Mother Bhumi, the universe is a living entity, the galaxy is a living entity. So community also, just like the group of people in this room has made up a certain type of force field. Anytime people are together, so the collective conscious, it makes up a certain... I think they're telling us that our time is over, huh? So, for our assignment tomorrow, anybody has a flashlight? So, our assignment tomorrow, focusing on community, we want each of you to find someone who's here, you know, on the Dham, who's with you, who knows you pretty well. If you can, find two people. And one of them may be, you know, your wife, your husband, or your sankirtan partner, or somebody who's known you for quite a while. And you ask them two questions. Now, I want you to write this down when you ask them. Don't try to defend when you hear what they have to share with you. Because the tendency is ego does funny stuff. And so we want to kind of bypass the ego so that we can bring back some interesting exchanges, but most important for ourselves, for yourselves, to be able to benefit from association. See, so often we are able to help each other because especially as we live together, we know each other. We look in the mirror, we see ourselves, and we see what we want to see. We codify and we perceive things a certain way. And so what we want to see is what usually we think we see, and it's not always that way. We said we're ISKCON, we're a society, that we are here to re-spiritualize the world. We first must re-spiritualize ourselves. So much pain happens in the Vaishnava community, so much waste of resources, time, and so much stagnation, because we do not honor each other sufficiently. And one of the ways we can start honoring and appreciating and maximizing our togetherness as we make it more genuine. So somebody who's been around you for quite a while, they know so much about you from what they see, what they hear, what they experience when they associate with you. So first thing we'd like you to ask these one or two persons is what things they feel that you do that bothers them. And you let them know that you really want their honest appraisal. Now, because we are to be param dukkha dukkhi kripam buddhi, we are dasos mi dasu dasono das, we have a primary identity of being the servant of each other. So therefore, what we say, what we do, and what effect we have on each other is should be very important to each of us. And sometimes we do things without really trying to get sufficient reciprocation or take sufficient inventory. And many times people know so much about us and could help us if we are having open, honest communication amongst ourselves. So first we want you find someone who knows you pretty well, and you inquire from them, what are some things they feel that you're doing that just disturbs them? So you're just trying to look at your role in community, particularly in relationship to one or two people, and how you are enhancing their bhakti, or how you may be doing or saying something that they may feel is destructive or is a botheration. Second, you ask them what specific things they feel that you could work on or do to improve your devotional life or to be a better devotee. So we analyze those two things. First one, you want to find out from them what things that they feel that you're doing that may bother them. And you just write that down. And then you find out from them what things they would like to share with you that they feel could help you in being a better devotee. And you write it down. And then after you have heard from them, you thank them, and then you go, and later you look at it and you reflect on it. And by the time you come tomorrow night, have had some time, quality time, that you have reflected on that. And we want to bring these things together as we open up our discussion tomorrow night. So, is anyone in the last 3 minutes? I don't know if I better see your hand. But anyone have any question on the assignment? In other words, when you ask someone, don't get in an argument with them. Don't say, what you mean, this is what you've been thinking about me all this time? Don't try to defend yourself, but you do that worse than I do. You know? Or I may do this one, but this is what you do. No. The idea is, because the ego, it puts up all of these blocks. Krishna arranges so many ways for us to be able to help each other. And you'd be surprised how much we deny Krishna's help. Krishna gives us tremendous opportunities. But because we often don't have enough appreciation, respect, or we don't communicate with each other enough, many times some solutions to some issues we have or some ways of how we can advance a lot faster is right before us, but we don't take sufficient advantage of this. So this little exercise is to help us in focusing more on what we discussed today. ISKCON, a community for re-spiritualizing the world, have a certain type of governance. We see the power that can be there, but the danger if it is not used in the proper way. We see we have a certain responsibility to our families, responsibility to our children, grihastha life being most important, renounced life is there, is most spiritual. We see the significance in that there can be pseudo-community or there can be genuine community. That if we are just looking and dealing with pseudo-community and we take things like fragmentation, then we have more and more energy we put in, but at the end of the day, we have less and less results for the amount of energy that we have put in. We touch upon briefly, and we may start off with that tomorrow as we have our discussion. Rupa Goswami is coming right from the spiritual world. Nobody can let us know better about how to prepare for our eternal spiritual community than one who is a part of that eternal state of reality. So he is explaining to us in the Nectar of Instruction what things will help the individual and the community to prosper and what things will cause failure and what kind of activities need to be put in place to guarantee our particular success. So as we look at ISKCON, we see we all have some particular duty and responsibility to make a difference at a time when our society is fragmenting and the patterns that are there will be more fragmentation unless there are some serious shifts of more genuine sense of community and understanding and appreciating more of the power that's there if we allow ourselves to be used by that power. So you do that assignment and we'll be discussing that. We'll give you some simple assignments each night, but mainly something just to reflect on that God carries you through the day so we come back together. We're able to think more about this society that we have joined and to see what we can do in helping with the healing process. Thank you very much. Confound the child, I see the Prabhupada.